We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Monday, September 9th, and we are a day away from the highly anticipated debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump on ABC. It's actually happening, we think, tonight, but this comes in the wake of some interesting endorsements. Dana Bash had Senator Tom Cotton on because former Vice President Dick Cheney actually endorsed Kamala Harris. This to me was just shocking, but listen to Tom Cotton's response to Dana Bash on CNN. This is cut two.
Dick Cheney was Vice President of the United States for 8 years. He was a senior member of the House. He was chief of staff to Gerald Ford. He worked tirelessly to advance Republican policies for a long time. You don't think his endorsement of a Democrat with that kind of pedigree is going to make a difference with
I really, I really don't.
Trump voters who aren't sure about Harris?
Well, I mean, some of this is probably that Donald Trump beat his daughter in her last election by 39 points. I think most Americans are going to look at this race and compare the records they have. Again, it's a very unusual race when you have a president who served in office, who brought good times to America, and you have Kamala Harris, a San Francisco liberal, who has brought to America exactly what you see in San Francisco as well.
Yeah. Does anyone really care what the Cheneys think? I mean, you know, I'm more worried about ever going like duck hunting with Dick Cheney. But Liz Cheney as well, the one who was beat by 39 points in her re-election and is no longer in Congress, is also saying that she is voting for Kamala and has endorsed her. Here is Liz Cheney, former congresswoman on ABC. This is cut three.
Bottom line, why did you make this decision to support Harris, and why did you do it now?
Yeah, I, you know, I've been voting for 40 years. My first vote I ever cast was for Ronald Reagan in 1984. I've never voted for a Democrat.
Wow.
It tells you, I think, the stakes in this election. You know, Donald Trump presents a challenge and a threat fundamentally to the Republic. We see it on a daily basis. Somebody who was willing to use violence in order to attempt to seize power, to stay in power. Someone who represents unrecoverable catastrophe, frankly, in my view. And we have to do everything possible to ensure that he doesn't, that he's not reelected. Given how close this race is, in my view, again, it's not enough. You have many Republicans out there who are saying, well, you know, we're not going to vote for him, but we will write someone else in.
Right.
And I think that this time around, that's not enough, that it's important to actually cast a vote for Vice President Harris.
Unrecoverable disaster, but you know, nothing about communism, apparently. Tucker Carlson had some really good words in a response as he's doing a tour with Glenn Beck and Tulsi Gabbard and some others. This is Tucker Carlson's response to Dick and Liz for Kamala.
What they actually care about is the ability to continue to fight pointless wars, because that's where all the money is. That's where all the money is. And if you don't believe it, maybe you haven't checked your phone today to see that Dick Cheney and his horrible daughter have endorsed Kamala Harris. Dick Cheney. Now, why is that? What does Dick Cheney have in common with Kamala Harris? And it's really interesting, actually, because they're constantly telling us that the divides are along race and gender. And they were always telling us Dick Cheney is this rich white guy and Kamala Harris is this oppressed woman of color, they've got nothing in common. But actually, they have everything in common. Because they're both neocons. That's exactly right. They have everything in common. And it tells you what a lie this race and gender stuff is. That's not the divide. The divide is in your heart. And if you think it's okay to kill people in order to get rich, you're on their side. And if you don't, you're on our side, no matter what you look like.
Well, let's welcome in Mark Lauder, who is the Chief Communications Officer for AFPI. And Mark, I thought Tucker was just spot on. I mean, when Kamala is trying to make this about race and gender and, you know, shattering the glass ceiling, as Hillary put it, that's really not what this is about. This is about Washington and the elites wanting to stay in control because they hated that Donald Trump got a first term.
Yeah, I mean, think about it, Jenna, and good morning, by the way. Think about this for a moment, whether it's Liz Cheney, whether it is Dick Cheney, whether it is, you know, Adam Kinzinger or any of the other Republicans who supposedly for the entirety of their public life and service and maybe even their entire lives have fought for a conservative ideas, conservative principles, whether that's low taxes, smaller government, peace through strength, a secured border, economic opportunity, and growth for all, who are willing to turn their backs on all of it, every single thing they've ever fought for, to stand with the people who are against, not just gray areas. This is not just a little bit like we used to fight it out back in the 90s when it was really just a question of, you know, two people fighting out in the middle. This is truly conservative versus radical progressive socialism. And they're willing to stand with the other side because they're either getting paid for it or because it's obviously, you know, that it keeps them in power.
Yeah, I was just talking to a friend last night, Mark, about that same divide that we're no longer seeing, you know, kind of a little to the right, a little to the left, but basically, you know, we're all kind of in the middle of preserving America and decency and the American experiment and freedom and liberty and the family and, you know, all of these values that Americans writ large at least used to embrace. Now it's the total extreme on the left, and I hope that worldview and that contrast is really evident at the debate tomorrow night, because that's the key, I think, to this whole idea of this election. And the whole bottom line issue is not about all of these other kind of top line things. I mean, to me, it really comes down to, do you want to preserve America or not? And Kamala Harris and her communism literally want to transform America into a country that we would not recognize. I mean, so what do you think that Trump needs to do tomorrow to evidence that and to maybe get Kamala to admit that that's actually her position?
Well, she's just not going to do it. I mean, even though she told Dana Bash a couple of weeks ago that her values haven't changed, you look at everything she's saying now, and she's saying the exact opposite. Now, I have no doubt in my mind that if she were to be elected, she would go back to those radical policies. I mean, even Bernie Sanders yesterday, I believe it was on CNN, is saying, yeah, well, I mean, she's still a progressive. She's still one of us, even though she's, and they're openly saying the quiet part out loud is that, well, she'll say whatever she has to say to get elected. But we still know, wink, wink, nod, nod, she's still one of us. And so for Donald Trump, I mean, I think it's very simple. Number one, Kamala Harris, this whole campaign, you know, a new vision forward, a new way forward, whatever it is, it forgets today. You are the reason why, Kamala Harris. You are the reason why we have a sky-high inflation, grocery prices, a wide-open southern border, the world at war. It was on your watch. You were the deciding vote. You were the last person in the room. How can you be the new way forward when you are the reason why we are here now? And then for Donald Trump, keep prosecuting that case, but also finish the sentence, as my friend Kellyanne Conway loves to say. Finish the sentence with, but we remember that things were more affordable, gas was cheaper, the border was more secure, and the world wasn't at war when Donald Trump was in office. And he did it once. He can do it again if you give him the chance.
Yeah, and do you think that they're, and I'm speaking with Mark Lauder, who's the Chief Communications Officer at the America First Policy Institute and a veteran of the Trump campaign. That's where I know him from, the Trump 2020 campaign and also the White House. And do you think, though, that there has been a little bit of memory holding from people who maybe are still on the fence, which, you know, it's shocking that less than 60 days out, there are people that are undecided, but, you know, supposedly, I mean, at least the polls are telling us that they are, there are, who don't remember, you know, kind of the pre-COVID of what America's prosperity and the vision and the economy and the border being closed and the safety and just the resilience of America, what that actually looked like just a few short years ago.
Well, I'm not sure if it's like memory holding it. I think, you know, if for those maybe who are like still on the fence, I think they're waiting for them. Those folks are waiting for Kamala Harris to convince them or for Donald Trump to convince them. And what we've seen from Kamala is that she doesn't really talk about any policies. She can't point to anything that she's going to do except for broad platitudes. And they want to hear Donald Trump say, well, this is how I'm going to do it. I did it once before. Here's how I'm going to do it again. And so I do think that, you know, elections are often about the future and who has that vision for the future. The challenge for Kamala is that she's trying to do something, and there's a reason why. Only one vice president in 188 years has been directly elected president immediately following, and that was George H.W. Bush. And that was because people wanted a third term of Ronald Reagan. People don't even want Joe Biden's first term, let alone a second one with Kamala Harris. And so they're holding out hope. Maybe they don't like the way he tweets or that says, sometimes he says mean things about people. But they're holding out hope. They're going to be disappointed because she can't separate herself from the problems that she caused today and get them to suspend belief to say, well, but I've got the answer. You don't hire the people who broke it to fix it. You got to go back to the people who had it going right the first time around.
Yeah, and so to your point, Mark, you know, I think that everybody pretty much is 100% aware of Trump and what he has been just hammering over the last, you know, 10 years now that he's been in the political space. And they almost view, and I think the media is purposefully positioning Kamala to almost be an unknown because, of course, they're distancing her from the Biden-Harris administration and all of those failures with some of these platitudes, as you said, and vague campaign promises, vague policy promises, to pretend that she's kind of this new candidate that we don't know. We don't know her policy. And sure, we'll believe that, you know, she actually wants to have common sense border policy when, you know, the last 4 years of Joe Biden has just seen massive numbers of people who've crossed the border illegally and who've come into this country illegally. I mean, so what does Donald Trump have to do then tomorrow night to tie her to the record of Biden and what everybody already knows are the failures of the Biden administration, rather than letting her kind of have this upper threshold and not having reached her ceiling of, oh, I'm this brand new candidate, new and shiny, and I can tell you all these campaign promises that clearly, you know, she's speaking out of both sides of her mouth. If she's speaking at all, because she's not even speaking to the press.
Right. So I think obviously he's got to point it out. He's got to point out that she was the tie-breaking vote for the American Rescue Plan and the misnamed Inflation Reduction Act. He needs to point out that for 3.5 years, you were the border czar. You didn't fix it then. Why do we think that you're going to fix it now? You were the one who broke it. You were the border czar, and you broke it. And then remind people that here are the things that we can do to secure the border, bring back Remain in Mexico, finish the wall, deport criminal illegal aliens. There's not a question about that. And she's the one who, to this day, even on her now, she supposedly got a policy page, says that she wants to give amnesty to illegal immigrants. It's right there on her brand new over the weekend debuted policy page. She says she wants to give a pathway to citizenship and amnesty to illegal immigrants. The Democrat platform actually expresses support for something called the U.S. Citizenship Act, which would force the federal government at taxpayer expense to go find the illegals that were deported under Trump and pay to bring them back to the U.S. and give them a pathway to citizenship. I mean, these are radical policies. And if he can point those things out and remind people that that's not how our country works, then he's going to win this debate.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane what she's actually advocating for. And, you know, meanwhile, people are just lauding that, you know, she looks so great in pantsuits. I mean, it's so shallow what a lot of her social media rhetoric and of course, the media fawning all over her has come to. And I mean, and it's not just in 2024. We've seen this in past elections, especially with, you know, the media, basically the mainstream media being a mouthpiece just for the DNC. But Mark Lauder, Chief Communications Officer at AFPI. So in just the last couple minutes I have with you, let's talk about ABC being the forum for this debate. That's obviously going to put Trump a little bit on the defensive. Hopefully he will have the same, I think at least he should have the same kind of tone and tenor that he had during the debate with Biden. Just, you know, very confident, very calm, not this defensive, aggressive, combative posture that we've seen in past debates. How do you think that he will approach ABC and, you know, even whether or not the debate is quote unquote fair?
Well, I think the first thing we have to figure out, and I think the first thing he will have to figure out on the debate stage, is are we going to get a redo of the CNN debate with Joe Biden, where, to their credit, and I will give credit where credit is due, Jake Tapper and Dana Bash were not the stars of the show. They literally asked the questions. I thought that they were fair questions, and they let the candidates decide. And they let the candidates answer. They let the candidates make their case to the American people. And it was up to the American people to decide if they believed Joe Biden or they believed Donald Trump. If ABC, with David Muir and Lindsay Davis, approach the debate in the same way, then I think the American people will be left to decide. If they decide to come in and start, you know, if they start coming in and trying to attack Trump, well, then, you know, he's going to respond in kind. But is that really where this country needs our supposedly, you know, independent press to be? So it'll be very interesting to see. But I agree with you. I think the same tone, demeanor, I think the rules help that with the muted mics, no audience, those kinds of things. Let them talk, correct them, and then move on.
Yeah, really well said. And I could not agree more that I think that the moderators of the debate need to not be the stars. We shouldn't even remember, you know, who they were, which is nobody's talking about, you know, Jake Tapper and, you know, and all of that for the CNN debate, because really the stars of the debate were how terrible Biden's performance was, really. But that's really what hopefully we need to see, is just both of them as the main players and the American people really hearing from Trump and Kamala. So Mark Lauder, really appreciate it. You can follow Mark on X at Mark with a C underscore Lauder on X. And we'll be right back to talk about the border more, because I think that's actually the number one issue that everyone should focus on beyond, you know, the worldview stuff is obviously important, but we'll talk about it more right after this. If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR, preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are talking about the first debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris tomorrow night on ABC. So that will be a very interesting and kind of, you know, what the setup will be between what Trump's policies are and what he talks about versus Kamala Harris, and whether or not it will actually come across to the American people the positions that both of them genuinely take, not just the campaign rhetoric, not just about, you know, the gender and race and all of the, you know, woohoo, go girl kind of stuff. And to me, beyond obviously the biblical worldview absolutes, which we should always be voting our main value, which is truth, and the truth of the legitimacy of government, which is to promote good, restrain evil, to protect citizens, to have a sovereign country, because we know that God established nations and borders. So part of voting for truth is understanding the policy concerning the border. And that, to me, is one of the biggest contrasts between Trump and Kamala Harris, because Kamala is absolutely tied to the Biden administration's terrible record on the border. She has been the border czar for the duration of the administration, and she didn't even visit the border. Babylon Bee had a great headline that Kamala Harris finally visits the border, and it's the On the Border restaurant, and she's like getting the free chips and salsa. And that's basically as laughable as this is, except that it's even worse than that. It's dangerous and it's tragic. I'm seeing so much on social media that is showing places like, you know, the middle of Ohio, with all of these Haitian illegals, that literally there was a clip yesterday that somebody was talking to their local, it was either like legislature or city council or something, saying that these Haitian immigrants and illegals were in local ponds catching ducks, cutting off their heads and trying to eat them for food. And I mean, this kind of thing should not be happening in the United States of America. We know that crime has expanded. There are so many reasons why we need to close the border. But that is, to me, one of the biggest issues, because if we transform this country with immigrants, illegal or not, then we are fundamentally transforming the demographics of this country. And you no longer have America. You have more of a diversity of worldview, because these people aren't coming and assimilating. They're just not. I mean, they're not coming and taking on American values. They're coming and they're Marxists or they're Muslims, for example. I mean, look at what is happening in the United Kingdom. So let's bring in Orrin McIntyre, who is a writer at The Blaze Media and one of my favorite commentators. So Orrin, I could go on and on, but I want to get your analysis here. I mean, I think that the border is probably the biggest, most concrete win that Donald Trump could proffer tomorrow night by contrasting the border under his administration versus the border under the Biden-Harris administration.
Absolutely. The border has been an absolute nightmare because there is functionally no border under the Biden-Harris administration. Even left-wing mayors, even highly progressive areas have felt the incredible pain. You know, as somebody who's lived in a border state most of my life, I am somebody who's always dealt with this reality. We are always familiar. But until recently, a lot of northern states, a lot of blue states got to avoid this fate. But now places like New York City are recognizing that the flood of immigration is absolutely destroying their ability to take care of the people who live there, the people who actually pay taxes, the people who are supposed to be there, who are citizens, who have a history and have a tradition tied to the place that they live. And now, as you pointed out, a place like Springfield, Ohio, a place that only had 60,000 residents, has now got 20,000 new Haitian residents over the last decade. Crime has almost tripled. The housing prices have exploded, especially in the low range where working class people are attempting to make their way. And like you said, you even have things like people, you know, animal sacrifices or animals, pets, cats and birds in the park being captured by these new Haitian immigrants who've been brought in. It's just this microcosm of how damaging this kind of unmitigated mass immigration can be to a community.
It really is. And I don't think that we can overstate this. I mean, even when Biden was still the nominee and all of the news reports were showing how, you know, over and in excess of 300,000 illegals were being flown in from the Biden administration and all of those reports. I mean, even at that point, I was posting on social media. I mean, you know, I don't care what
other issues, you know, that people have with both candidates, frankly, but, you know, particularly with Trump or whatever, this is something that has to stop. And we as a country cannot survive another 4 years of this kind of travesty. But now Kamala Harris has positioned herself as somehow stronger on the border than Donald Trump. I mean, they're using this, frankly, completely false talking point to suggest that he refused legislation in the GOP that would have secured the border. That legislation actually wasn't strong enough, which is why the GOP didn't pass that and were not advocates of that. And Trump, during his first administration, didn't sign it. But is there anybody who believes, Kamala, that somehow she's going to be more of a border czar now in a Harris administration versus what we actually saw during the 4 years of Trump?
No, there has to be somewhere like three people who have seriously drank all of the Kool-Aid who actually believe that Kamala Harris is going to secure the border. Somewhere in MSNBC, someone is making a speech to that effect. But even Democrats know that this is out of control. Like I said, even Democratic mayors are crying out for relief from an administration that has specifically put in things like humanitarian parole initiatives to make sure that more people can funnel in from countries like Haiti legally, technically, because of the way things have been set up. That's the truth, is ultimately, this is not some disaster. This is not some crazy thing that is happening to us. This is a situation that has been specifically manufactured by the left, by the Biden-Harris administration, and sadly, to some extent, with a lot of complicity from many people on the right, people who do not care about making sure that communities are safe, that care more about driving down wages, making sure that there are more customers, making sure that there's no more money or bodies, labor, cheap labor flowing into the system, and don't care very much about the continuation of the American way of life. Let's be really clear. In any other scenario, if you imported a third of the population of a city into that city from an entirely different culture that speaks a different language, that practices a different religion, that builds itself its own ethnic conclave and locks out everyone else, that is an attempt at ethnic cleansing. That would be considered a war crime in any other context. And yet, because the Biden administration decided to say, oh, well, I guess these are, you know, it's humanitarian. This is just a refugee project. It's more than fine to displace that community. It's more than fine to make sure that their homes are more expensive, that their children are less safe, that their pets are less safe. It's just insanity.
It really is. And I think that people who are, you know, the so-called moderates who are buying into some of this rhetoric about how, you know, oh, we're this huge melting pot and blah, 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 and this is humanitarian. And they really don't see the consequences of this worldview of having open borders. And they're not learning from the cautionary tale that is the United Kingdom and Ireland right now. I mean, with their population rising up and there's literal riots in the streets because these people are so concerned about the illegal immigration coming into the nation of Ireland. What is the best way for the Trump campaign and for Donald Trump tomorrow night to frame this, not just, you know, oh, we'll keep you safe and, you know, some of these things that aren't necessarily concrete, but to actually articulate to the American people, this is literally about your health, safety, and welfare. I mean, we don't have a nation without borders.
Well, the first thing I would hit on is that this is obviously election interference. The Biden administration is leaving the border open so that they can change the political constitution of the United States. They know that immigrants coming in, especially immigrants who are heavily dependent on federal programs, are going to vote Democrat. And while they may not be able to vote immediately if they're illegal, the left is pushing for amnesty. Of course, we have birthright citizenship due to a terrible reading of the 14th Amendment right now. And that means that what they're setting themselves up for is generations of victory through the democratic system if they can shift the type of people, the number of people who are loyal to them inside the United States. Second, I would keep saying what guys like J.D. Vance have been saying, something I'm very glad that many people on the right are finally saying. America is a people. It is a nation. There are many people in this nation who are welcomed in, who assimilate over time, but they do so slowly, and they have to become part of our nation. We are not an economic zone. We are not a multicultural melting pot. We have one culture. We are one people, and that has to be protected. If you bring people in mass, they will not assimilate. If you bring people in from cultures who are too radically different, they will not assimilate. Our values have to be squarely pointed at turning this nation into, once again, one cohesive identity, one cohesive people. And we can't do that if the government is specifically importing millions of people a year to bring down wages and make housing impossible for people.
Yeah. And this, again, Oren, is just where all of this strategy is not piecemeal of Kamala Harris being for open borders in the Democrats, and then they're also for this idea of socialism over here on the economy, and then this idea on public education, and it's all comprehensive in that it's intentionally designed to create a society that is more and more dependent on the government, and literally the catchphrase that we all now are very familiar with from the World Economic Forum, you'll own nothing and be happy. They want to make and transform America into a vastly different country, and that is on the line here. And I hope that even if we end up with a Kamala Harris administration, that we will have a Republican majority Congress and Senate, so that there can be at least a little bit of a barrier for some of the more radical policies. But things like immigration policy, I mean, that's unfortunately has become a little bit more unilateral, even though constitutionally Congress has the power to set a uniform rule of immigration and naturalization. When you don't have a chief executive that is enforcing that, then it's almost like, what does it matter that Congress legislates, which is really frustrating. But that also gets to the judiciary, because if the judiciary doesn't hold this in check, then, where are we at in terms of actually enforcing immigration law?
Yeah, ultimately, I think that this really is going to rest on the shoulders of GOP governors. And it's not fair, because that's not really the way that it's supposed to work. But I think really, ultimately, both parties in Washington are not heavily invested in this. Hopefully, you would think that, Donald Trump, with with some level of Republican legislative backing, would be able to get a hold of this. But ultimately, I think that the power is going to have to fall. The responsibility is going to have to fall on governors who are willing to do the work, whether or not the federal government is supposed to be doing it. Ultimately, I believe that you do have a right as a state to protect yourself from invasion. A foreign invasion is something that you absolutely have the right to go ahead and mobilize against, and that is exactly what we're seeing. We're just not treating it that way. And so I do hope, ultimately, that we do get some relief from Washington, D.C., but I think we also need to be pushing and encouraging Republican governors to take vigorous executive action to protect the residents of their states, no matter what the federal government decides to do.
Yeah, really excellent point. Oren McIntyre, writer at Blaze Media. You can follow him on X and also read everything that he writes in Blaze Media. And I would encourage you to do that, because really thoughtful commentary. This is why we only have the best people here on AFR. Of course, only the best people. But that is so important, to emphasize sovereignty, not just our national sovereignty and our borders, but state sovereignty that is implicit in our U.S. constitutional structure, which is the idea of federalism. And I wish, honestly, that we had every Republican governor that was as strong as my home state governor, and in yours as well, Governor DeSantis in Florida, because he literally wrote the Florida blueprint that is, I think, just a strong barrier against Washington saying, it doesn't matter what you guys do there. We're going to protect the citizens of the state of Florida. And if we had 25 Republican governors that had the same type of understanding of actually utilizing the power of state sovereignty, we would see a fundamentally different United States, regardless of who the occupant of the White House is. And that was actually how our country was originally intended to be, that more emphasis was on the states rather than being so concerned nationally. I mean, it seems like the conversation doesn't even stop after a presidential election. It's like just then the next is, okay, who's going to be the next president, rather than emphasizing the states. So how can, for people listening, you know, if they live in a red state, how would you encourage them to encourage their legislatures and their governors to pay attention to this and to be more actively engaged in things like, you know, what Governor Abbott did in Texas as well? I mean, declaring an emergency, that is constitutional for the states, like you said, to say we are going to protect our borders regardless of what the federal government is or is not doing.
Yeah, obviously the most important thing is to encourage executives in that position, let them know that you appreciate vigorous action, let them know, you know, praise them for that kind of action, make sure that their offices are flooded with both requests and then praise when they take that kind of action. Same, of course, for your legislators. But the biggest thing is making all of this more red. The more that you, you know, a Republican governor has a Republican legislature and all of them are encouraged to be as right-wing as possible, the more they feel empowered to do this. The reason they usually hesitate is that they think that they're not going to have the backing, they're not going to have the support. So making sure that you are just at every level, from something like county sheriff and commissioner all the way up to governor, that you are installing people and encouraging and exhorting people to continue to push border security, these kind of things, to the maximum amount that it can be done. This is how things need to change. Because like you said, so much of this is focused on the federal government. Everyone's just expecting Donald Trump or, you know, Ron DeSantis or someone else to walk into the White House and wave a magic wand and solve this problem. But that's not how the government is supposed to work, and it's not how it's going to work ultimately. And so we have to see that local and state support.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where, again, voting our values and the fundamental value of truth that is predicated on the biblical worldview has to be the value that we vote for. And that should inform our policy, that should inform our actions and how we engage in the civil realm of government and that institution that God has ordained. And we need to be more actively engaged locally and understanding what's going on locally. And we're going to talk in the next segment about a really important amendment that is on a number of the state constitutions. But, you know, all of these other citizens initiatives that the left is trying to push and just circumvent conservative and Republican legislatures, because now that abortion is back to the state level, primarily because we know nothing's going to happen anytime soon on the federal level, it's just so divisive, that now the left is focusing on the states, and we need to be actively engaged. Otherwise, we are going to rapidly lose even our red states, which is just awful, because we need to, as Americans, again, have a fundamental value of truth. So in just the last like 2 minutes that I have with you, Oren, overall, you know, besides the border, what issues do you think that Trump also needs to emphasize just to show the contrast of the worldview, not the personality, not the party affiliation, but the worldview difference between the two candidates?
Well, you know, obviously housing and the economy have been huge. I'm very glad to see that he is attempting to address the housing crisis, though, you know, larger questions on how that works in certain areas. But good to see that he is tuned in to the necessity of that. Obviously, Kamala Harris is running against her own economy right now, which is hilarious, but it's something that you do get to do if you have a press that will simply fall all over itself and is actively working to fight for your election. But I think ultimately the border remains the key issue. And for exactly the reasons we talked about previously, this is a generational setup. Not only is it disrupting the culture of the United States, not as only is it driving down wages, not only is it driving up housing prices, not only is it clogging the medical system, education systems are bending themselves around each other. You know, I used to teach in the South Florida school. The amount of resources dedicated to foreign languages, including Creole, Haitian Creole, is just amazing. And so this is all changing. But at the end of the day, the thing that matters most is the fact that the electoral system is being impacted. And without addressing that, the Republican Party is just no longer an actual opposition. As long as the Democrats can import voters, we are in a huge down, or we're in a huge we're in a position of losing. We're going to constantly be under threat there.
Downward spiral. And this is why the SAVE Act is so important. And as Congress comes back into session, I think it's this week, that's going to be a pushing. Chip Roy and others are going to be pushing for that. But Orrin McIntyre, thanks so much. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we've been talking this whole time, not just about debate preview and some of the issues and the worldview, but also about state sovereignty and why it actually matters that we are engaged in our states. And I think it will matter even more if Kamala Harris ends up in the White House. With the communist Marxist perspective. And again, that's not a pejorative term. That's not just a negative sort of attack. It's literally her policy worldview. That is the position now of the Democrats, is that they want these communist Marxist policies. And I did an entire show, if you missed it, with Daryl Harrison, who's one of my very dear friends and is an amazing pastor, biblical counselor. And he's also the co-host of the Just Thinking podcast. And if you haven't listened to that, I mean, be prepared. They're really hefty episodes. They're like 3 hours long. So I listen to it a little bit in chunks, but they only release them about once a month or so. But they're on a lot of these hard-hitting topics. And I learned so much about critical race theory, about, you know, a lot of different issues from those podcasts that I knew about, but just even more deeply, some of the conversation that he and his co-host Virgil Walker have. So I highly commend that podcast, especially if you just are want to kind of look at some of the topics that they cover. And if there's one that's very interesting that you want to do a deep dive, it's a great resource. But Daryl Harrison and I did an entire hour on the definition of Marxism, because the left accuses conservatives and especially Christians of just using that term, kind of throwing it around, and, well, we don't really know what we mean by it. And of course we do. We know where the idea of Marxism came from, that it's rooted in communism and socialism and why it's bad for America. So I'm not going to reiterate all of that today. But if you missed that show, go back. It was not this past Friday, but the Friday before that. We'll probably re-air it sometime just because it was so good and substantive. And I just love Daryl Harrison's perspective. But this is why, if we get a Marxist president, which is, I mean, our founders couldn't have even contemplated, I don't think, that we would be in this position, that Americans would even think about having a commander-in-chief that had that worldview. If we have that type of person in the White House, it will be even more important to make sure that the people who are in charge of our states are doing the right thing and understand the power that they actually have to repel Washington and to say no, not on our watch. And one of those people that I've continued to highlight is my governor, Governor Ron DeSantis, out of the great state of Florida. And he has literally written the blue book that I wish that all other governors in the country would follow. This is why Florida has done so well. I mean, and if you remember, he won by such a narrow margin in 2018. Florida could have trended just totally Democrat, very blue, more crime and, you know, all kinds of things if DeSantis had not won that election by a very, very narrow margin. And this is why voting matters. This is why participation in elections matter. And even though I was not yet a resident of Florida back in 2018, I'm very grateful for all of the people who voted for the best available candidate and voted their values. So we have, you know, some of these things called citizens initiatives, and we've talked on this show, and I know other shows on AFR have been talking about the amendments that are proposed in and on the state level. There are 8 states currently that have amendments to their state constitutions that are contemplating cementing a so-called right to abortion in the state constitutions. Citizens initiatives like this are basically a way to circumvent the state legislature and our elected representatives, because if we, the people, don't like what our elected representatives are doing, well, yes, we can vote them out of office. We have that power, but we can also, through our initiative and signatures, put measures on the ballot that are citizens' initiatives. And of course, with the state constitutions, there are rules and process of how language gets put on the ballot for a constitutional amendment. And the problem with this is that, like here in the state of Florida, there are so many special interests that end up petitioning and spending so much money for signature gathering that it's really not a reflection of the voting population, and it's not really a citizens' initiative. It's a special interest initiative. And that's what Amendment 4 here in the state of Florida and other amendments around the country, they are Democrat and Soros-funded. The one in Florida certainly is, and DeSantis has continued to repeat that. And their special interests, I mean, Planned Parenthood and the entire abortion industry, they're funded. Amendment 3 here in Florida is funded by the big marijuana industry that wants to corner the market in Florida, not have any regulation on anything other than medical marijuana. So they just want to, and also growing in your own home, right? So it's very, the language is very perfectly tailored to help the industry. And these are the people that are backing these amendments. So they're not really about the citizens. They're all about the special interests. And we have to understand that. And I hope that conservatives and at least the Republican members of Congress, who should be the conservatives, right, will step up and call out these amendments. And Governor DeSantis is actually calling on the Florida members of Congress to donate from their campaign funds into the fund to help defeat Amendment 4. And he was at the Florida GOP dinner a couple of nights ago or over the weekend, absolutely slamming representatives who have not opposed the amendment. So while we still have time, this is cut one of Governor DeSantis.
To mount the campaign. Congressman Aaron Bean, Congresswoman Kat Kamick, Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart, Congressman Neil Dunn, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Congressman Carlos Jimenez, Congressman Corey Mills, Congressman John Rutherford, Congressman Michael Waltz, and Congressman Daniel Webster. I want to thank you guys for not just standing for principle, but also being willing to contribute and doing it. We also have other U.S. congressmen that have publicly taken a position against the amendment. They haven't committed to help us financially, but I think they probably will. But I want to recognize them anyways. Congressman Bill Arrakis, Buchanan, Donalds, Franklin, Salazar, and Stubbe. So thank you for opposing this, and we want to, you know, marshal some support for you. The others that I have not named have not taken a position against Amendment 4, and to me, that's untenable to just sit here and let George Soros run amendments in our state and not be willing to stand up and say, no, not on our watch. That's the least you can do as Republicans. So I think that these are both two important issues. I think it will impact the fabric of the state. Don't get me wrong. But this is a playbook that, if this succeeds, is going to impact this state in successive elections. If we have a state where one entrenched interest can spend $100 million and amend the Constitution to benefit themselves and their pockets, you're going to see more and more people do that. If Soros can come in and run these amendments and have success, you are going to see more left-wing groups decide to do that. So you end up, after three or four election cycles, you end up being California through the back door. Does anybody think that's good for the state of Florida? I don't think so. So we're in a position where we have two very deceptively worded, misleading amendments. Neither of them should have been allowed to be on the ballot by the Florida Supreme Court, but here we are. And so it's a responsibility for people affiliated with the Republican Party of Florida to stand up and say no. We are doing fine as a state. We do not need to change the fabric of the state with having everybody, you know, using marijuana in public like they do in Denver and all these other places. And we certainly don't need a Soros-backed Amendment 4 to pass. So this is important. It's important that all of our political leaders, you know, stand up and be counted.
And I could not agree with him more. I think that as he said, the least that elected Republicans can do to actually stand up and oppose this. But just moments ago, Donald Trump actually posted on his Truth Social that, quote, as a Floridian, I will be voting yes on Amendment 3 this November. As president, we need to continue to focus on research to unlock the medical uses of marijuana to a Schedule 3 drug and work with Congress to pass common sense laws, including safe banking for state-authorized companies and supporting states to pass marijuana laws like Florida. This is ridiculous. I totally disagree with Donald Trump. He is caving to the special interests. Maybe he doesn't know that this is Soros-backed. The Amendment 3, we'll probably talk about more about this tomorrow as the music is already playing. But, you know, this is something, again, that, you know, Trump needs to take a conservative position. And it's very frustrating when you have people like DeSantis speaking out so well. And then you have Donald Trump that is just cutting him off at the legs. So this is why voters need to be informed and not just take their positions from either Trump or DeSantis. Be informed, vote your values, vote truth, and make sure you know what the initiatives are on your ballot. You can also reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net. We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.